Hey guys, welcome back to Open Language. This is Adam.
And this is Connor.
And we are finally getting to part two of a very interesting lesson.
Yes, we're talking about writing style.
Yes, and we are not just talking about any kind of writing style. We are talking about that style which has been proffered by the very famous linguist, by the very famous academic, Steven Pinker.
Yes, he's Canadian.
He is Canadian.
You know, we probably talked about that before, too.
It is funny. Like, if you do listen to the clip, and we will have more clips of him today, mm-hmm. Yeah, the Canadian accent does it comes out, eh?
Comes out a little bit there, eh?
A little bit there, eh? Yeah.
So he was talking about prescriptivism versus descriptivism.
That was part one, right?
That's right.
So we talked about how, you know, some people say, like, oh, you must say these words, and mm-hmm. other people say words are words.
Yeah, language changes. Exactly. You know, people make language.
Right.
Not so, rules.
Not rules, man. Now, today we are talking about another, I don't want to say controversial, but it's a little bit controversial.
It is. Yeah, we're talking about the passive voice.
The passive voice, right? Because there is this idea that exists. It's a very strong idea that the passive voice is something that should be avoided.
Yeah, like what you just did right there.
Oh, right. Yeah, should be. Yeah, it's something that should be avoided.
Yes, you should avoid.
I should avoid using the passive voice. Now, so this idea, again, it's very pervasive. It's very strong. But is it a good idea when it comes to writing style?
Right.
Now, of course, in choosing clips, I kind of feel like we're just kind of taking a little bit from here and taking a little bit from there.
Yeah.
You know, he actually, you know, he writes books. He gives talks. Mm-hmm. But we don't have the time to present his whole argument. Basically, what we are talking about today is another very famous author named George Orwell.
Yes, didn't he write 1984?
He did, and Animal Farm as mm-hmm. well, Homage to Catalonia. I really, really loved George Orwell when I was in university, and I especially loved this essay, Politics and the English Language.
Oh, okay, so that's what he's talking about in the beginning here, right?
Yes, exactly. So, without wasting any more time, let's dive in and see what Steven Pinker has to say about the passive voice.
Sounds good.
Orwell, too, says, a mixture of vagueness and sheer incompetence is the most marked characteristic of modern English prose. He wrote in 1949, showing that some things don't change. I list below various of the tricks by means of which the work of prose construction is habitually dodged. The passive voice is wherever possible used in preference to the active, a passage that has not one, but two uses of the passive voice to tell people not to use the passive voice. Well, the passive construction could not have survived in the English language for 1,500 years if it did not serve some purpose. Why can't we do without it, even when telling people to not to overuse it?
So there was a lot there in that little text, right?
Right. We started off with George Orwell. Mm-hmm. And Pinker says that Orwell says, a mixture of vagueness and sheer incompetent is the most marked characteristic of modern English prose.
I'm sure he talked just like that.
Well, probably more of a mixture of vagueness and sheer incompetence.
So vagueness, just something that's not clear. It's ambiguous, right?
And that's the whole point with, you know, these debates between the active voice and the passive voice, because sometimes the passive voice can kind of make things a little vague.
Yeah, and that's why we use it, right?
Of course.
Yeah, to soften things.
That's
right?
That's the point.
Yeah.
But of course, Orwell is making the point that, you know, this vagueness is actually a result of sheer incompetence on the part of the writer.
Right, so sheer is just a way to emphasize the next word, the noun, right?
The noun, mm-hmm. Yeah. And before we did this lesson, I was thinking that the word that follows sheer is usually negative. Like, here we see incompetence, meaning like inability or stupidity.
Yeah, exactly. Or it could be sheer terror.
Sheer terror.
Sheer stupidity, like you said. Yeah.
Sheer idiocy. Mm-hmm, but then Connor reminded me that there are also some happy words that come after this.
Sheer joy.
Sheer pleasure.
Right. Or you could have some sheer willpower.
Oh, yeah. Like if you're trying to quit smoking.
Yes, yes.
You need sheer willpower.
Determination.
Determination. Exactly. And it sounds like George Orwell is pretty determined to change the way that people write. Now, it should be really clear here, he's talking about, the way politicians speak.
Right, right.
Not necessarily the way all writers write, but the whole point of his essay is how these kind of bleed into each other.
Right, he's not talking about poetry, he's talking about prose,
prose,
right?
Prose, yes. Yeah, so yeah. This is just literature, right?
Yeah, literature, good, yeah. Or letters to your mom. Or
letters to your mom. Yeah, basically anything that doesn't follow the poetic form. You know, roses are red, violets are blue. Connor is sweet.
So are you.
So, aw, that's so nice. That's so nice. Now, another pretty good English, like British English phrase that comes up next is basically saying that all of these authors are just kind of avoiding the hard work of actually writing, of actually thinking and using your brain and translating that to the written page. But he doesn't say avoid here. He says much funnier.
Yeah, he says habitually dodged.
Dodged.
Right. So dodge means get out of the way.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly.
We used to play dodgeball.
Dodgeball was so fun.
It was very fun. You throw a ball at somebody. How could that be more fun?
Exactly. Well, it could be more fun if you caught the ball and then that person would be out and you throw the ball at somebody else.
Right.
Now, we also use dodge to talk about, speaking of politicians, they often dodge questions.
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah. Like, you ask a question and then, we're working on that.
I'm very committed to the environment. Yes. Very committed to insert the issue here. Right?
Yeah. Next question.
Next question.
Yeah.
Now, we also dodge bullets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, not a real bullet.
Hopefully.
Maybe if you're Superman, you can do that. Dodge a bullet just means avoid a kind of dangerous or precarious situation.
Yes, it's the kind of thing that would make you say, whew.
Yeah,
jeez.
Dodged a bullet.
Dodged a bullet there. Yeah, like maybe, I remember in high school when we were supposed to have quizzes or tests, but like, you know, either the teacher forgot or maybe someone pulled the fire alarm.
Yeah.
And then we wouldn't have to write the test, right?
Ooh, dodged a bullet.
Dodged a bullet.
Yeah. So in the next sentence, it's talking about the passive voice versus the active voice. And we all know, like, I give Adam a beer. Adam was given a beer.
By you.
By me.
Yeah. Sometimes it's really silly. But, you know, there's other times when the passive construction is awesome. Like, it's amazing. For example, all people are created equal.
Right. Yes. Right?
We shouldn't say that, you know, like someone created people equal. I guess you could say God.
You could say that.
But a lot of people don't like that. So they just say a phrase like all people are created equal.
Right. And that's what Pinker is saying here is that, you know, this passive voice couldn't have survived for 1500 years if it didn't serve some purpose.
Right. So serving a purpose, meaning, you know, be useful.
It'd be useful. Yeah. We often say, serve some higher purpose.
Right. Or if I want to question, like, what purpose does this serve?
Yeah. How is it useful?
Right. Exactly. Okay. So in the next clip, we are going to answer the question, why can't we do without it? Even when, you know, our style guides and our very famous authors like George Orwell are telling people not to overuse it.
All right.
It comes down to the design of language. You can think of language as an app for converting a web of thoughts into a string of words. Now, the writer's knowledge can be thought of as a kind of mind-wide web, what cognitive psychologists call a semantic network. That means that there's an inherent problem baked into the design of language. The order of words in a sentence has to do two things at once. It's the code that English syntax uses to express who did what to whom. At the same time, it necessarily presents some bits of information to the reader before others, and thereby affects how the information is going to be absorbed.
And we're back. And it sounds like it all comes down, all of these problems that Steven Pinker is getting paid to think about, they all come down to the design of language.
Comes down to. So that just means it's all about
it. It's all about. That's the reason.
Yeah, we often use this when explaining a problem. Oh, yes, like, why is the economy tanking? Well, it all comes down to education.
Okay, sure. Or like prisons. Right?
Prison.
Why are so many people in jail? A lot of people say, oh, well, you know, maybe they didn't have a good education.
Mm-hmm. Or, oh, yeah.
You know, like things like that. It all comes down to something.
Yes, for sure.
Now, this is really interesting because I would imagine that Steven Pinker has been talking about these ideas for a very long time.
Yeah, for sure. And he does say the word app here.
Right. He's saying language is an app, a kind of app. But I'm imagining like 1970s Steven Pinker saying like language is like a calculating machine.
Yeah, a computer program.
A computer program, right? So it's probably he just updated his PowerPoint slides here.
Right. He uses this expression that it's kind of like a mind wide web.
Right. The idea is this app that language is, it has to take the concepts, mm-hmm, which are in your brain, yep, or in your mind, I guess is better, in a kind of web.
Right, exactly. Now, this isn't like a dictionary word, mind-wide. He's just adding wide on the end.
Right, like worldwide.
Worldwide, citywide, nationwide. But you can do that too, maybe.
Anything, yeah.
Anything, yeah.
China-wide.
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 For sure.
Right, so again, this mind-wide web, which, by the way, has another name here, according to cognitive psychologists.
Yes, a semantic network.
A semantic network. Okay, so obviously we're talking about webs and networks, so you can just imagine all of these concepts kind of linked together, mm-hmm, right?
Yeah.
So you think about open language, mm-hmm, as a concept. Well, it's going to have education, handsome.
Yeah. nice voice.
Nice voice.
All attached to that concept, right?
Right. It's going to be, you know, in just some kind of big web or network.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what semantics is. It's about the meaning attached to some kind of word or utterance.
Right. And we also saw later in this clip a word that's always pretty related to semantics.
Yeah, that's syntax, isn't it?
Syntax.
That's right.
That's more like the rules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. The rules, the grammar.
The grammar.
Yeah.
So all of those concepts about open language, you know, education, quality, handsome.
Nice voice.
Nice voice. I mean, oh, great audience.
Oh, we of course.
Also say,
oh,
amazing listeners.
Amazing.
Tremendous.
Tremendous.
These all have to be linked together in some kind of syntactical way, right?
Mm-hmm,
open language has the best listeners.
Yes. People say they have the best listeners.
People say.
Now, before we keep going, what about the word psychologist? Because I know there's another thing called a psychiatrist.
Right. So we have talked about this before. There's not a very clear-cut definition.
Mm-hmm.
I think a helpful way to keep these separate is that a psychiatrist can give you medicine.
Yeah, he's more like a medical doctor.
Right. Now, a psychologist is either working at a university, mm-hmm, or they could be what we call a clinical psychologist.
Right, right, yeah.
Now, the word we have here is cognitive psychologist.
Right, so that's dealing with your mental cognition, right?
Right, so these people are more likely, instead of sitting you down and saying, Connor, what was your earliest memory? Tell me about your father. You know, it's not going to be doing that. He or she is probably going to be studying your brain.
Yeah.
Doing an MRI of your brain.
Scanning your brain waves.
Scanning it.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, but that's just a little aside there. Back to the actual problem at hand, which is the language.
Yeah, that's right. And there is an inherent problem, which is baked into the design of language.
Okay, so interesting that Steven Pinker just called language an app that converts these concepts into a string of word. Now he's using baked.
Yeah.
Mixing metaphors much, Dr. Pinker?
A little bit, maybe. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so baked into just means it's like part of it, right?
It's already part of it.
Already part of it. It's accounted for.
And it can't be unaccounted. It can't be taken out.
Right, right. Don't we use this a lot in, like, talking about economy?
Economy, yeah. Like, for example, investors will look at, the share price of a company.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that company has, you know, maybe some scandals or maybe, you know, there's some bad news that will be coming soon.
Yeah, yeah.
But oftentimes with those companies, that information will already be accounted for.
Mm-hmm.
So people that are watching the price, that kind of help set the price, have already thought about that, and it's already reflected in the price.
Right, right, exactly.
But also, this gets used a lot in politics. In fact, it was used quite a bit in 2016.
Oh, with Hillary and
Hillary
Trump?
Hillary and Trump, mm-hmm. Yeah. Because, you know, both Hillary and Trump, they have seen their fair share of scandals.
Oh, they have, yeah.
So many
they
people
continue
were,
to.
And they continue to, or some of them do. And they would always say, the pundits, the reporters, the journalists would always say that, you know, Trump can't win because he has all of this baggage.
Yeah.
But then other people are saying, like, no, Trump voters, they know Trump. They mm-hmm. understand that he has had many wives, several bankruptcies.
Yeah.
That is already baked in to their conception of him.
Yeah, they've already accounted for that.
Right. Okay, so the whole main point of this is Steven Pinker is saying, look, no matter what we do, we have to convert all these concepts that are, you know, floating around in our minds into a string of words. But when we do that, we have to make choices about the order and the presentation, right?
Right, yeah. He's saying, like, the syntax is the code that kind of expresses it, right? We talked about that, you know, your syntactical choices.
Right.
Like, what do you say first? And what you say first is going to be kind of interpreted by the listener, and it could change the way it sounds.
Absolutely. I mean, usually, generally speaking, like, the topic goes mm-hmm. first.
Yeah, the topic. The most important thing goes first, right?
Right. Yep. And if you're telling a story, you know, that the listener has to kind of keep in mind that, you know, like, the boy hit the dog.
Yeah.
The dog was raised by the woman.
Right.
The woman who lived down the street from the boy. Like, you need to be able to keep all this in order.
For sure. I mean, it's already in order in your head, but not in the listener's head.
Right. And so this is kind of the crux of the argument here is that some information needs to be transmitted to the listener or the reader before others, and that thereby affects how the information is going to be absorbed.
Yeah, for sure. So we've got this word, Thereby. Looks a little like therefore, and it's kind of like therefore, isn't it?
It's pretty much like therefore. Therefore is a great word.
Yeah.
Tremendous word. Tremendous word. Thereby, it kind of just focuses on the way something
the way
happens.
Through that, kind of, right?
Right. Now, this same sentence probably could have a therefore in it, and I don't think anyone would really mind.
No one would notice, maybe.
So what we're going to do is we're going to put thereby into the grammar section and just give it a little bit more, just a better treatment, I guess.
Yeah, sounds good. All right, well, we're going to take another listen to that full lesson, thereby allowing you guys to, you know, try to process this a little bit more.
Oh, that sounds like it serves a pretty good purpose.
It does, yes.
Orwell, too, says, a mixture of vagueness and sheer incompetence is the most marked characteristic of modern English prose. He wrote in 1949, showing that some things don't change. I list below various of the tricks by means of which the work of prose construction is habitually dodged. The passive voice is wherever possible used in preference to the active, a passage that has not one, but two uses of the passive voice to tell people not to use the passive voice. Well, the passive construction could not have survived in the English language for 1,500 years if it did not serve some purpose. Why can't we do without it, even when telling people not to overuse it? It comes down to the design of language. You can think of language as an app for converting a web of thoughts into a string of words. Now, the writer's knowledge can be thought of as a kind of mind-wide web, what cognitive psychologists call a semantic network. That means that there's an inherent problem baked into the design of language. The order of words in a sentence has to do two things at once. It's the code that English syntax uses to express who did what to whom. At the same time, it necessarily presents some bits of information to the reader before others, and thereby affects how the information is going to be absorbed.
All right, so we just heard that lesson, the full lesson, one more time. This is really kind of important in the field of English teaching.
It sure is. I mean, I had to teach the passive voice to a room full of bored students.
Yeah,
many times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even when I was young, I remember, don't use the passive voice, the teacher said.
That's what's so interesting, right? Because in part one, we talked about the grammar Nazi.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
These people that, you know, these are the rules and you must follow them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in the beginning, that's okay and that's kind of necessary, right? When you're a beginning English learner.
Sure, sure. But the people that are grammar Nazis, you know, whether they are like teachers or editors, I mean, they are not beginners. It's kind of interesting because, you know, these people have not actually thought about what is the difference between an active voice and a passive construction?
Yeah, like the example you gave in the beginning, like people were created equal.
Mm.
You're not saying anything about who did it. You're just saying something about people.
Right, exactly. I'm making, you know, a political statement there. All people are equal. You don't have to appeal to a higher power. Mm-hmm. You don't have to appeal to anything.
Yeah.
I always thought too interesting, like disasters.
You
usually say like, 15 people were killed by the tornado. Don't want to attribute agency to a storm. Like
exactly, yeah. It's a natural disaster. It happens.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that's so many ways we should do this. And these grammar Nazi teachers are just like, I want to say thoughtlessly. Maybe I could think of a better word, but just transmitting this this information without actually challenging or interrogating it first.
Right, exactly. And Pinker's point here, the mere fact that it's lasted 1500 years and we're still using it in common speech is like proof positive that it's useful.
Yes, exactly. Okay, well said, Connor, and well said, Dr. Pinker.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Now, it is your turn, guys. We want to know about a few things, actually. We want to know, A, how you feel about the passive voice. You've obviously learned English for a long time. What have your teachers told you?
Yes, yeah, we'd like to be let known by you.
And also, you know, like, what about the passive voice in Chinese? It's there. It gets used. So tell us about that. Are there, you know, Chinese scholars that tell you not to use the passive voice?
Oh, yeah. So let us know. We always look forward to reading your comments, guys. And until then, we'll talk to you later.
All right, bye, guys.